Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Matt Leiner, and you're listening to Reign of Troy Radio.
Reign of Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Sam Darnold, one cool customer, or what?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Oh, I can't breathe. USC are the Rose Bowl champs.
All right, Trojan fans, turn up the volume. It's time for Reign of Troy Radio. Here's your host, Michael Castillo.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Reign of Troy Radio. This is a CarCast coming to you after USC's heartbreaking 30-27 loss to the Washington State Cougars at Martin Stadium in Pullman. We're going to react to the game and give you our thoughts and so much more. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Reign of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Reign of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play, and Blog Talk Radio. blogtalkradio.com/Reign of Troy. Our email address is reignoftroy@fansided.com, and our phone number is 213-373-1872. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, Alicia. You know, we picked a perfect car cast to put out on National Podcast Day.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't love a post-lost car cast? It's the first one in a while.
I'm sure everyone is just clamoring to listen to this thing.
Oh, yeah.
First things first, can we just talk about for like 3 seconds how awful USC Twitter is after a loss? It's so bad. It is so bad. Now, I know there's so many of you guys listening that are on Twitter that are awesome. Love you guys. But there's also some really awful takes. Really awful.
Oh, I could talk for a much longer than just 3 seconds about USC Twitter and how exhausting it is to be on USC Twitter sometimes. It's exhausting to watch that game because it was a very frustrating performance, and it was a very subpar performance from coaching staff on downward to players. But the most subpar thing about tonight was USC Twitter. I get the frustration. I really do, guys. Like, at a certain point, you have to just take a deep breath and consider context, consider bigger picture, and take a really bad performance for what it is and not overblow it into literally the end of the world, because that's what USC Twitter is acting like right now. USC lost for the first time in a year.
It's the end of the world.
And it was nuclear on Twitter. The first tweet I got after the game was, "See, I told you Clay Helton needs to be fired." I can't, guys. I'm exhausted by this. Oh my gosh. I know.
And I don't even want to get into the whole former player tweeting that or texting Scott Wolf that he's tired of underachieving. I don't even want to get into that. But let's talk about this game. SC loses 30-27. It was a game, I think, if you're a Washington State fan, you're probably really frustrated that you didn't win by more. If you're a USC fan, you're frustrated that USC didn't pull it out. SC had chances. Washington State had chances to really put this game away. And neither team kind of took advantage of those chances for long stretches of this game. It was really a defensive battle, I would call it. Even though if you look at the score, 30-27 doesn't scream defensive battle, but it felt like one.
Well, the defense was the only good thing about this game.
Right.
I mean, I think Washington State can take heart in James Williams and Luke Falk and a couple of those guys. But, you know, for the most part, I thought that USC's defense held on where they could. Washington State's defense did everything they could to really keep USC and Sam Darnold out of a rhythm. And I thought they did quite a good job for a unit that I wasn't sure if they were legit. Like, they looked reasonably legit. I mean, USC gets in their own way enough, but you still have to show up as a defense in order to keep USC out of that rhythm. So, it was in a weird way, it was a defensive back and forth. But I mean, what it really comes down to is that USC's offense is just not
It's not there. It's not there.
Not there.
It doesn't help that they were out without a bunch of guys. Stephen Mitchell obviously did not make the trip. Jalen Green got hurt along with Jordan Iosefa. They collided in warmups, and they both missed the game because of that. So just freak stuff there. You had three new offensive linemen performing.
Yeah, and can we just talk for a second? I mean, part of my exhaustion, part of my frustration about this whole thing is that USC played really poorly. There's no getting around that. But at the same time, you look at USC's injury list, and oh my God.
It's bad.
Toa Lobendon, Vianne Talamavau, and Chuma Adoga all out. Stephen Mitchell out. Yeah. Jalen Green out. Stephen Carr got injured by the end of this game. You're already missing Daniel Amadebebe. You have on defense, you have Malik Dorton going in and out. You have Rasheem Green playing on a bad ankle. You have Iman Marshall going out for a period. Greg Johnson, backup cornerback who probably would have gotten run in this game, comes out with a shoulder injury that's going to keep him out for a while.
Right. Iosefa misses the game.
Iosefa misses the game, which means that you're stuck with John Houston playing. In a game where, you know, maybe you would have wanted to move in and out of John Houston and Jordan Iosefa, you could have used him. He's gone. You're already without Porter Gustin. I mean, at what point do you sit back and say, yes, these two things are true. USC played very poorly, but USC was in a extremely, extremely difficult position of being on the road on short rest with half of their squad on the sideline.
Well, you know, there's a lot of factors, though. There's a lot of factors, and this is why I think it's important to balance that out. I know it's really easy to say, "Oh, well, the team just sucked tonight," or whatever you want to say, whatever you want to tweet out there, or call in the rant lines and say that. I get it. I get why you think that. At the same time, injuries do matter. But at the same time, injuries aren't everything. And this coaching staff, I thought, particularly on offense, did not help negate the impact of penalties. They did not help negate the impact of injuries. You can't control injuries. You can't control bad calls. What you can control is how they impact your game, and you need to lessen the impact of them. Try to manage them. Try to minimize them. Do something, and USC, on a consistent basis, did not do that. The play calling was atrocious at times, and again, I get that it was tough. I get that they had to go away from the run at some point because they couldn't trust an offensive line full of rookies to, you know, get push up front. But then if you're going to abandon the run, you need to go to something that allows you to throw in some extended handoffs, get some screen game going. And I know that you lose Jalen Green, who is a really big blocker, and that hurts, and that takes you away from the screens. But find something. And I get that Stephen Carr is someone you'd want to use in screens, but find a way to do something. Well, and there was just nothing.
I totally agree with you on that. And that's really the storyline coming out of this. Like, I think there's a lot of things that I could pass off to context. The one thing that isn't, that I won't cut slack for, is I think T. Martin's play calling was atrocious. Absolutely atrocious. And I agree. Like, first and foremost, am I off base in thinking that if you're starting three freshmen or a backup offensive lineman, an inexperienced guys, am I off base for thinking that maybe you should have tried to establish the run from the get-go? Because run blocking downhill, isn't that the easier part of an offensive line's job?
You would think so.
Than being in pass protection?
You would think but they do a lot of zone blocking schemes that kind of make it a lot more difficult. And I'm not an offensive line expert to really go into that.
I mean, me neither. But I like, the coaches have said before, like, oh yeah, these freshmen are picking up the run scheme really quickly. They just need to catch up in the pass pro. So if that's the case, then why not try running it more?
Right.
And I totally agree with you. At a certain point, you just couldn't, because it just wasn't working. So fine, you abandon it. But if you're going to abandon the run in terms of handoffs, don't abandon the concept. Why aren't you doing, like,
turn into Washington State's offense, right?
Hmm?
Turn into Washington State's offense. Adopt an air raid like offense where you're using your backs as receivers.
Or getting the ball out quickly to your receivers.
Right. Where was the buy in this game?
Vi was nowhere. I don't know where he was. I still want to know why the plan for him to be a short yardage and goal line back just completely got nixed.
Right.
In the week before the season started. But even more so on the drive that USC goes down the field and ties the game late on, what was super effective in that drive? Quick shots out to Joseph Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
Why weren't they doing, like, where was a bubble? And I put this on Twitter, and it started out as a joke, but it wasn't a joke by the end of the night. I know that Jalen Green is your guy for blocking and Steven Mitchell are your guys for blocking, but instead of handing the ball off, why not try some bubble screens? Why not try some short dump offs to the tight ends? I mean, I wasn't able to say it in the lead up to the game, in the preview of the game, but one of the features of practice that they were doing a ton were short little dump offs to Josh Follow throughout practice. Short little dump off to Josh Follow. And they tried to target Josh Follow in the worst possible moment, and Sam Darnold made a really boneheaded decision.
Hold on. Can we just talk about how there were four receivers, period, targeted in this game? Tyler Bonds, Deontay Burnett, Joseph Lewis, and Josh Imatorbebe. Those are the only four people who were targeted in the pass game. They didn't throw a single pass to a running back or a single pass to a tight end.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable when you're not able to get anything going. And Sam Darnold's not in a rhythm. You got to find a way to force him into a rhythm. And I get that those passes to Joseph Lewis, those little out routes on that one drive where SC looked, you know, competent on offense. They looked competent on offense on two drives. Very mm-hmm. first one in the game and the one that tied the game in the fourth quarter. That was it. That was really it. Everything outside of that was awful. And Ronald Jones scores on that one run, and I don't even know how much of that run was Ronald Jones, because he had a gaping hole and he was gone as soon as he got the ball.
Yeah, well, and okay, all of it's funny you bring up the Ronald Jones run too. Everything, every single thing you mentioned, every single thing that involved USC having a competent offense, for me, it involved Tyler Vons.
Right.
Tyler Vons was a man tonight.
He looked amazing.
That first drive was Tyler Vons getting yards after catch, yards after contact. The other touchdown drive was Tyler Vons converting on fourth down and Tyler Vons getting wide open for Sam Darnold to underthrow him at the goal line, which just whatever. That at least he completed the pass. And then the other one, Ronald Jones, I thought that the offensive line gave him a running lane, and then Tyler Vons took out three defenders in the second level blocking, and mm-hmm. Rojo was gone. So I mean, you could see those moments where USC could be effective. They could be effective when they gave the ball to Ronald Jones, and they could be effective when Tyler Vons was a feature of the offense. For whatever reason, Tyler Vons disappeared in the middle quarters, and USC just continued, like, and this is where this is T. Martin's cardinal sin, is that Sam Darnold had a very, very poor game. Sam Darnold right. was, we had talked about in midweek that, like, Sam Darnold's basement being like a passer rating of 130 being okay. We found out that his basement was 92.3.
He was 92.3 tonight, and we talked about how the Cal game was his worst game ever. No, this one was his worst game ever. Yeah.
So if
at
Sam
least
Darnold
as a thrower, I thought he looked great. I thought he looked great running. Scrambling. I thought he looked great running. I thought that was the best we've seen him all year with his feet. I thought he made good decisions to evade the pocket. Of course. Except for the very last play when he didn't even see a guy shoot up a wide open A-gap that was coming right at his face.
Yeah. But I mean, even then, like Ryan Phillips on Twitter was pointing out, like constantly just on repeat, like Darnold missing the zone, like doing the wrong thing on the zone read.
I'm telling you, I have this sneaking suspicion that they're not actually zone read.
That they're that he's not supposed to run, that he doesn't get the
yes.
choice.
That
makes sense.
That they're pre-called.
It could be, but either way.
Because you know they were pre-called
to
for Cody Kessler. So it's very possible they're also pre-called for Sam Darnold, and he doesn't have the option.
Yeah, and sometimes he does and sometimes he doesn't. I could see that being a thing. But you know, back to basically T. Martin took a Darnold who was not performing well at all and then put him in even a worse position with three backups on the offensive line. By continuing to run these plays that required, you know, that weren't quick outs, that weren't the kind of things that Darnold could just get the ball out and build up some confidence and be able to make plays that way in very small kind of ways and then graduate up to bigger plays, They kept throwing the ball downfield on first down. They just refused to run the ball at all, and then kept getting behind the sticks throughout the whole game.
Right.
Throughout the whole game. It was, and as I've always said, I mean, play calling is a great, play calling can become a scapegoat very, very easily, because play calling looks horrible when guys don't execute, and it looks great when guys do execute. And there was plenty of lack of execution tonight, but this was the first time that I thought, like, 100% the play calling is the culprit here. Sure, there was lack of execution, but even if there was execution, the play calls are wrong.
Right. Yeah, I did not like the play calling at all. I thought that they had issues in the middle quarters. I thought there were times where they should have been running the ball and they were throwing it. There were times I thought they should be throwing, they were running it. There was a drive, I think in the second quarter, where SC comes out. First play is a pass play I think it was Josh Imatorbebe. I can't remember for sure. It was incomplete. Second play is like a little out route on second and 10 to Joseph Lewis. Incomplete. I would have ran on second down. Yeah. If you throw on first down, I don't care. Throw, run pass, do whatever you do on first down, whatever. I don't care what you do. If you want to run a flea flicker, run it on first down when you're in Washington State territory. I don't care. That's not the problem. The problem with the flea flicker was the execution.
I forgot about the flea flicker. Oh, my gosh.
But it was the execution. The play call was not a problem there. My issue with it, though, is if you go to second and 10, when you're at second and 10, the whole purpose of second and 10 is to get anything. You need to get a 2-yard run is fine. Set up third and 8, it's at least makeable, right? Get anything. But yet they throw when they're having trouble throwing on second and 10. That's incomplete. And then you're forced into throwing the football on third and 10. And then do you even want to talk about the worst play call in this entire game?
The run?
The third and 13? Okay, so I have no problem running on third and 13 in a general sense. If you know you're not going to get it, or it's a 4-down territory situation, and you've been successful running. A, USC was not successful running. B, it was a stupid inside handoff on the shotgun, which those only work when you're ahead in the ahead of the chains and all that kind of stuff, and you have to be able to block up front, and they weren't doing that, and they had like 4 minutes to come up with that call because there were like 2 timeouts, and a commercial,
yeah,
and that's coming what they come up with, and then the fourth down play is just like Darnold making a quick throw and Tyler Vaughn's making a miraculous catch, but that drive should have failed. It should have failed because of that third down play.
No, I totally agree with you. The one thing I do disagree with you on is the flea flicker. I think that's a bad play call.
Why?
Because, like you said, like it's all about the context of like what has worked for you.
It was at the 41-yard line.
Yeah. You
it was in the first half.
Yes. But the point
was...
So on
first down.
Yeah.
When's a better time to run it?
Why do you need to run a flea flicker?
I'm not saying you need to. I'm just saying
when was the last time USC ran a flea flicker and it worked? How many? I mean, USC's run the flea flicker several times and it's been blown up each and every time.
But I don't think that you expect to lose 12 yards.
Well, no, because you don't expect there to be a grounding penalty.
Right.
And even that grounding penalty, I don't know. Maybe this is being unfair, but my dad and I both agreed that we don't know why Darnold didn't try to dump it off to Tyler Petit, because he was there. Maybe he decided that he didn't want to throw an interception, even though he tried to throw several interceptions throughout the game. But either way, you're right. The execution was bad, and it's another one of those things where if it works, then you get the praise for it. But I like what I don't like is this general idea that USC can't do simple things well. And yet they're trying these random flea flicker, double reverse pass things that don't generate anything except chaos. And you can't run a simple dive at the 2-yard line to punch in a touchdown. Like,
yeah, but they also shouldn't be running a dive at the 2-yard line.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Okay, let's let's talk about this. Where the game got away from USC was a couple of moments. First of all, remember in the Cal game, we talked about how USC's defense saved the offense by forcing Cal to two field goals, bookending the half, and Cal made one and they missed one, and holding them to 3 points instead of 14 points was what won them in the game. Remember we said that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had the same situation in this game that we saw, right? Uchenna Nwosu has an amazing interception. Amazing interception. Sets USC up at the 2 yard line, and they don't get in. They don't get
unacceptable.
In. SC is up 14-10 at that point. All they have to do is get a few yards. And first of all, so the first play was a run up the middle. Okay, fine, whatever. It's first down. I don't care what you do. I don't care what you do on first down. I really don't. Second down, Sam Darnold should have been intercepted.
Horrible throw.
Yeah, but I was okay with the call. Whatever.
Yeah,
but
I don't mind going to follow.
Terrible throw. Yeah. Third down is the handoff to Stephen Carr, who just gets swallowed up, and he had no chance. Because, again, you have third and goal at the 3 yard line, and you're running an inside handoff out of the shotgun. It's not going to freaking work.
No.
It's not going to work.
No. Especially when opposing teams clearly know what USC's goal line package is.
Right. You have a bunch of tight ends on the roster. I know that Daniel Motobebe is out. And I know that you're not comfortable with Follow and Krummenhoek and all those guys. But you find a way. Do something. Or get Vavai in there. Do something other than just this uncreative inside handoff.
Or if you're going to give the ball to Carr at the 2 yard line, let him go outside and see if
get
he
him
can
in space. Yeah.
Get somebody, if he can beat somebody to the edge. And maybe you lose yards on that play, but I don't know.
But you tried.
I don't want something.
You tried something.
I don't want Stephen Carr.
Because you have an offensive line that has a bunch of guys on it who have never played before. Why are you trusting them to win one-on-one battles? And I don't mean that in a way that, you don't want to trust your players. Obviously, you want to trust your players, but you shouldn't put your offensive linemen in a situation where you're banking on them when they're inexperienced like that. Make it easier for them. Don't make it worse. And so they settle for a field goal. Washington State gets the ball before the half. SC's defense was already starting to get gassed at that point. And they start bringing in a whole bunch of the second teamers. We see Liam Jimmins on the defensive line. I think Levi Jones got in on that drive for a little bit. And SC's defense was really soft on that drive. Washington State scores easily, and all of a sudden it's tied. 17-17. When it should have, at least before that drive, should have been 21-10.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. I think I've seen this many times on Twitter now, and I totally agree. The game changed when USC failed to get the touchdown after Uchenna Nwosu made that interception. And the frustrating thing, and I think where people have very valid criticisms of T. Martin and Clay Helton and the offensive staff here, is that this is not new. USC has struggled to punch the ball in from the 2 yard line the entire season. And they Stephen Carr scored the same situation when Uchenna Nwosu got an interception at the 2 yard line against Cal. Stephen Carr barely made it in and bailed out what was another unimaginative play call. But this goes back to Texas. This goes back to, was it Western? There was a. Somebody else, but Texas, Cal, now Washington State, you can't get it done at the goal line. If you can't get it done at the goal line, when your defense gifts you a touchdown.
And if you're going to put all your emphasis and come out here every single week and say that the emphasis is to fix the goal line situation, fix the red zone opportunities, you got to fix it at some point.
Yeah.
You got to get creative and find a way to fix it, whatever the hell it is. And they haven't been able to do that. They just really haven't been able to do that. But there's a lot more for us to talk about here on this episode. But we will get into talking about Sam Darnold. And hey, we're going to get into some positives. There are some slight positives, sort of, in this game. And talk about where USC can go from here coming up next. All right, Alicia, I want to talk about Sam Darnold. Because I know if you watch the game, the ESPN broadcast the last 2 weeks have really been all about Sam Darnold. Positive, negative, let's focus the camera on his parents kind of stuff. And it can be nauseating at times. But
what was nauseating? What was nauseating was the Jets jersey, Darnold guys. Like on how much airtime did they get? Like, geez.
It's the last week they kept showing him, and it's like really, you know, that guy paid $200 just so he could get attention. It's annoying. It's annoying. Anyway, if you're listening, Jets guy, I'm sorry, but let's talk about Sam Darnold though, because he obviously is struggling right now. I want to know, how much do you think it is legitimately on Sam Darnold not playing well? How much of it is the style of quarterback he is dependent on his offensive line to a small degree, and it's highly dependent on his wide receivers? How much of it is play calling? How much of it is a factor of everything? How much of it is injuries? How much of it is maybe us included and all the national media and everything just focused on the fourth quarter of the Rose Bowl?
Well, I mean, I'm going to exclude myself from that category because I feel like I was the one banging the drum all summer and all off season that, yes, the fourth quarter was great, but don't forget the third quarter. And don't forget games against Oregon and Cal and others where I thought that he wasn't that good, where he was still putting up great numbers, where he was still doing great Sam Darnold things, but he had some deficiencies in those games. And the whole point of it was that he was going to elevate himself beyond those things, and you live with it because that's what you get from, you know, Darnold. You're going to get some things forced, but you're going to get a payoff eventually. And I think the problem for him this season is that the payoff hasn't come. And maybe it is because Juju Smith-Schuster isn't out there and Darius Rogers isn't out there helping pay him off. And maybe it is because Deontay Burnett was banged up today and not able to be the main guy, at all times. But I think that Darnold is not playing well. And I don't think it's like, for instance, Tyler Petit. I just saw this on Twitter where Tyler Petit was saying to the people bashing Sam, there's no quarterback I would rather go into battle with, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I think there's Sam Darnold gives you every reason to want him to be your quarterback. I still wouldn't trade Sam Darnold for any quarterback in the country. But that doesn't mean we can't point out that Sam Darnold is not playing well. And I think part of that might be that he doesn't trust his offensive line. And we've made this point before that he looks a little bit like Cody Kessler. When Cody Kessler lost complete faith in his offensive line, and unfortunately he never recovered from that at USC. And what's concerning is that I'm not sure how Sam Darnold's going to recover from that when he's got Andrew Voorhees and Austin Jackson, who are true freshmen, protecting him, you know, at tackle and at guard. So that's definitely playing a role, no question. I think play calling is not helping him because, like I said, I think you could take a lot off of his plate, but USC doesn't want to for whatever reason. So it's everything.
I think another thing is I think his emphasis this season, both on his personal side and from what the coaches have tried to encourage him to do, doesn't do him any favors. Clay Helton has talked about it, that one of the things he wants him to do is when he's rolling out of the pocket, look downfield and try to make a play with his arm rather than just settling to make one with his feet. And so I think that's part of what's led to a couple of the interceptions. I don't think that was the problem necessarily tonight. I thought tonight he was really good out of the pocket and running with his feet. And I liked seeing that. And I thought he was good on the keepers. I thought he was good scrambling. I thought he was good picking up room when he needed to do. All that kind of stuff. So it's not just that, but it's just a million different factors all at play here. I don't think it helps when you only have two receivers that you're comfortable throwing to and the other team can completely just focus on those two guys and they can just drape defenders over Deontay Burnett and at some point over Tyler Vaughns, and then you're not comfortable throwing to anybody else and Michael Pittman's not getting on the field so you can't throw to him. And like, what do you do?
Yeah, I think all of that is a factor. I also think, do we bring up the whole change his release over the summer thing? Like, do we think that's... Because I'm always wary when they talk... Whenever they talk about changing a guy's throwing motion, I always sit back and go like, okay, I understand why. Sam Darnold has every reason to do that because Sam Darnold intends to play in the NFL and that matters to the NFL.
Yeah.
But if I'm looking at it from a college football fan's perspective, I wonder what matters in the NFL does not matter to me. It matters how you perform at the college level. And I like maybe Darnold's lack of confidence or his that the way that he's just that little bit off in his throws. Is that because he's having to think about his release? Is that because he's not comfortable with his release? Is that because he's, you know, like a golfer messed up his swing by trying to change it? I don't know. Like, I'm not a quarterback expert. I don't know the technical aspects of that. But
yeah, and I'm going to be wonder. Completely honest. I can't even see what's different. I really can't.
I don't mean so, either. Me neither.
So I'm not one to talk about that. Okay. Other thing I want to get to. Let's get to my whole prediction about SC winning this game big. Though I think
jinxed it.
And I was wrong for sure. Absolutely. I said in the preview that I was willing to go down with the ship, and that the injuries were definitely a factor, and that that was could surely prevent SC from winning the game and from that being true. And the injuries got even worse, so it definitely didn't help out, even though USC certainly didn't play to their potential on offense. But defensively, I was really okay with the defensive performance. Yeah, they gave up 30 points, the most points Clancy Pendergast has ever given up against an air raid team or a team like Fresno State in 2013, which technically wasn't air raid, but he treated it as one. So, yeah, he gave a lot of points. But this was a defense that really forced, you know, Washington State into kicking 3 field goals. This was a defense that set up USC a couple of times with good field position on offense, and they just never took advantage of it. And Washington State, if you look at the numbers, they ran 81 plays to USC's 58. And at one point, it was even the disparity was much wider than that. So they were gassed, particularly in the fourth quarter. We saw that they looked dead. They looked beat. And I felt bad for them because you can see that the short rest was getting to them. All the physical games that they've played was getting to them. And again, I don't know that I'd change anything on defense.
So I don't think USC's defense played exceptional, but I like you. I think the defense did more than enough.
Yeah, that's all you can ask for.
And that's all you can ask for.
That's all you can ask for.
Yeah, no question. I think that a huge part of it, and this goes back to, I don't think the offense is carrying their weight, and I think it is a team game, and I think I had meant to mention this in the preview, so take me at my word, guys, but I had it written down in my notes that I was curious to see, or I would suggest for USC to try to go out and be Stanford against Washington State. And what I mean by that is ball control, because Washington State's going to want to run a lot of plays, mm-hmm. and your defense is going to get gassed. And one thing, one of the ways you can help your defense is by trying to win the time of possession game. USC did the opposite of that. USC sarked it basically, and basically tried to everything they could to get off the field as quickly as they could, and basically put the defense in a hole. And I agree. I thought Uchenna Nwosu made a bunch of great plays. I thought Rasheem Green was excellent. I thought that USC's secondary was vulnerable, but they
also got bailed out by a lot of drops.
Washington
State learns, I don't want to say learns to catch, that's messed up. If they're able to make a lot of catches in this game, if they're able to pick off Sam Darnold in the second quarter, if they're able to catch any ball that's on their hands, SC isn't even close to winning this game.
Well, I don't know about that, because I still think USC's defense has a quality about them to stiffen and to force those field goals. And I think Washington State certainly could have played better. But I think that USC's defense has a tendency to make plays. It certainly would have helped if Washington would have helped the Cougars if they had caught the, as many balls as they should have. But all in all, as a team sort of defensive performance, I don't think it was deficient.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with it. I know it wasn't perfect. I know that they gave up 30 points. I know that there was that they gave up a couple big plays on that one scoring drive where they just went down really easy at the end of the first quarter and the beginning of the second quarter, which SC gives up now every single game. Yeah, they could have done a lot better. And there were parts of the running game where they struggled in the running game. SC allowed 4.1 yards per carry, but that's really doesn't tell you much because a lot of that is sacks. And Jamal Morrow 91 yards on 6 carries with only a long of 35. So it's not like that all came on one play. No, there were a bunch of chunk plays that he had. So, yeah, the defense could have been better, but I think you put it all together, they were good enough to win this game, and USC's offense certainly wasn't. And if you look back at it, yeah, if Uchenna intercepts that ball and walks into the end zone and it's a pick six, maybe SC Different wins game. That game, and all the other stuff could have played out. Like, that's how close the defense played it. And that's how close the defense was to bailing out USC. And that's why I think it's really annoying to get to the point of where Sam Darnold is you know, the one bailing out USC because of that one drive. I get it. And, you know, we talked about it after the Texas game, and the Texas game feels like an eternity ago, because back then I said that anytime USC had Sam Darnold and the way they played, it feels like they weren't going to lose. Certainly 2 weeks has been a long time, and it feels a lot different now. And I think I would want to take back a lot of the things I said back then. But what's bailing out Clay Helton and what's bailing out the offense, or whatever you want to call it, is the defense, 100%.
And
the offense isn't allowing them to bail them out completely. That's the weird part.
That was the story today. It was the defense tried to keep USC in this game, and the offense didn't give them anything outside of 2 drives.
They had a drive where they started at the 2 and a drive where they started at the 28, and they got 3 points on each drive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Credit to Chase McGrath for coming through. But again, go back to the Cal game. And we talked about how Cal could have taken over the game. It was just the inverse of that.
But
because this was USC not finishing off the drives.
Right. But so we're talking about USC as an offense, and what frustrates me, and I don't want to pin this all on Sam Darnold, because it's not fair. It's not all Sam Darnold. But this is why I've said over and over and over again, don't pin everything on Sam Darnold going one way or the other. You can't go through 13 games saying Sam Darnold's the only reason USC is winning, and then turn around and go, you know, and look at it and say, well, so what did Sam Darnold do in this game? No, it's a team game. USC won those 13 games because the defense put in their part, and the offense put in their part, and Darnold put in his part, and Rojo put in his part, and Cam Smith and Iman Marshall and Rasheem Green, and everyone put in their part, and USC won games. The problem is that last week, the defense put in their part more than their share, and USC won the game, not the offense. Not anything Sam Darnold did. And this week, the defense put in their part, and the offense didn't give him anything back. And Sam Darnold tried to do that magical Sam Darnold thing, and he did it for one drive, and it ran out at the end. But you can't say that Sam Darnold is the savior when Sam Darnold is not playing well enough to keep USC out of these situations in the first place.
Right.
Play that card.
I do wonder what the narrative would have been had, say, SC blocks that field goal and takes it back. Like, is Sam Darnold the hero for that final drive? Because would have been the last time he'd been on the field?
I think that's the narrative. I think the narrative is, so Sam Darnold bailed out USC again. And that's just not what happened. Sam Darnold can't bail out a team that he helped put in a hole. And again, I'm not saying that it's all Sam Darnold, because I think USC's offensive line didn't do well. I've already detailed all the reasons why I think T. Martin failed the team tonight. But I mean, if Sam Darnold played 5% better in the first 3 quarters of the game, if he played 10% better, I think USC might win this game. And saying that when USC did not perform well enough in this game, again, I'm gonna go back. Like, considering everything, considering the injuries, considering the problems with the performance across the board, defensively, offensively, everything, with the exception of Reed Budrovich, who was exceptional tonight. Like, Reed Budrovich was the only flawless player on that field, and Chase McGrath. So USC's kicker and punter were flawless.
Who would have thought that, you know, a month ago we're talking about how like it's a borderline failure that USC's 2 scholarship special teamers lose their jobs, or whatever you want to call it. Maybe not a failure, but it was a shock. It's whatever you want to call it. And yet, right now, you can make a really strong argument that, aside from Uchenna Nwosu, who's USC's best player? Reed Budrovich and Chase McGrath, the 2 walk-ons.
Yeah, maybe. But okay, so accepting that everyone's performance tonight was flawed except for the punter and the kicker, USC still lost this game by 3 points. USC still had the ball with a minute and 40 left and
despite
a chance
to
win the
despite
game.
Despite all of that, they 3 points.
Yes. So while I agree to get a little big picture here, while I agree that there is reason to be frustrated, there is reason to be critical, there is reason to look at this and say, you guys need to get better from top to bottom, no question.
Yeah.
This is why I'm mad at Twitter. Because you can't act like this team is crappier than crap. You can't act like this team is a complete and utter failure when they lose a game to the number 16 team in the nation on the road. By 3 points. They played horribly and lost by 3 points. So
to
where
the number 16 team, to the team that everyone said they were going to lose to before the season anyways.
Yeah. So where does that tell you about USC's level? Is USC's level college football playoff right now? Hell no. But in September, you don't get into the college football playoff. You get into the college football playoff with putting together a resume and getting better week from week. And you and I had talked about this before. Would you take 4-1 coming out of September? And I think you and I both said yes.
Yes, so, as long as it wouldn't matter because they haven't played a Pac-12 South team. So yeah.
So coming out of it, it's 4-1. Is USC in a great spot right now? No. Does USC need to get better? Absolutely. But again, calm down. If you are talking about firing the coaching staff, you are doing a disservice. USC has fired two coaching staffs in the middle of the season. Where did they end up? Right. That's not how you get better.
Can we just talk about the idea of if USC fired Clay Helton, like in a weird hypothetical world, if they fired Clay Helton, and let's say after the season that let's say SC goes 10-2 and they fire Clay Helton, if you were a head coach, why would you take the job?
I wouldn't look at USC. I wouldn't look USC's way. The other thing.
I can win a Rose Bowl 1 year, go 10-2 the next year and get fired. Screw that. I'm never taking that job.
The other really funny thing, let's play out this hypothetical where USC fires Clay Helton on the tarmac tonight when they go back to LA. Oh, who becomes the head coach at USC?
It's T. Martin.
Yes. So yeah.
It's have the fun with that, Marshall guys. To safety situation.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's never a good thing. Okay, before we completely go into where does USC go from here, let's go to the positives. Name two positive things, and I'll name two positive things. Go.
I think Uchenna Nwosu is an exceptional player who has lived up to my expectations from very high expectations coming out of the offseason.
I've not watched enough college football around the country to know, to give a definitive answer, but I will say he is absolutely at an All-American level right now.
He's building an All-American resume.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that he should be an All-American right now, but he is putting a resume together to put him on that trajectory. And he's exactly everything you could have hoped for. I put it on Twitter at one point. I'm getting really close to saying he's the best Narbonne player in the history of Narbonne in college football. Really close. He's only got to pass Namdi, and Namdi wasn't an All-American. So,
yeah. And so since I already gave a shout-out to Reed Budrovich, who exceeded every expectation I had.
Yep.
I think that coming out of this game, one of the biggest positives you can have is that you can now look at Tyler Vons and say he is a legitimate target for you. He is a playmaker that you can trust in big moments to be strong, to catch the ball, and to move the offense.
And I think the biggest impact of that is when Steven Mitchell comes back.
Yes.
Then you got three guys. You got three guys, and then you can use Jalen Green for what Jalen Green needs to be used for, a blocking wide receiver.
Yes.
You don't need to rely on him for anything else. You just use him out there to block, and you let Steven Mitchell and Deontay Burnett and Tyler Vons catch the balls. And then you just wait for Michael Pittman to get healthy. Boom. There you go.
Yeah.
Maybe it sounds easier than it is, but it probably is. But yeah. So, okay, my two positives. Number one, as bad as the offensive line played, I think I will say that they could have been a lot worse. Sam Darnold was not getting sacked left and right. There were some false start penalties, but I think you expect that. And there weren't a million false start penalties. There weren't a million holds. So I think that you can tip your cap a little bit to Austin Jackson. for his first, you know, first team rep action at a, of a significant in a, period.
In a horrible spot. I mean, that's... Yeah.
And, actually, and Clayton Johnston.
Before I let you continue, I just think that the thing to point to here is this wasn't a Cyrus Hobby game for any one of those guys.
Exactly. Exactly. And it could have been, and it probably should have been, and it wasn't. Right. It wasn't. It absolutely wasn't. So that it wasn't, I think they deserve some a little bit of a credit for that. And then the only other thing I would say is, I guess kudos again to the defense for coming up when they needed to. They could have come up a little bit more, but again, they did enough to win the game. And
I mean,
that's kind of all you can expect.
We didn't even talk about how the defense puts USC in a position to win that game by forcing a field goal.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That was a huge moment that just didn't, the payoff didn't come, but mm-hmm. that was a huge moment.
Yeah, and despite how good Washington State was on first down, it felt like they were getting 9 yards every first down. They held Washington State far below their average on third downs. Washington State had a lot of third and longs. So, yeah, SC's defense, they gave up 30 points. They gave up a lot of yards, a lot of plays. Again, they did their job. For what they were tasked with, they did their job. Yes, they could be better, but they were, I think, they were so gassed. I feel bad for them later in the game. Okay, last thing. Where does SC go from here? They're 4-1. They're 2-1 in the Pac-12. They still control their own destiny. If they win out, they win the Pac-12 because they haven't played anyone in the Pac-12 South, so they would have all the tiebreakers, all that kind of stuff. And their playoff chances are not over. It's one loss, and I think when it's all said and done, this is the loss you probably wanted to have anyways. If you could pick one loss, this would be it. This one or Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another reason why I'm sitting here really frustrated with USC's fan base. And maybe, I don't know, I never know, because sometimes, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the...
Grease. You're never going to get it
remember.
Right.
I'm never going to get
it's not the syrup
right,
either.
But
I'm still mad at you for screwing up the syrup.
I was thinking of like a thin syrup. You know, thin syrups can be slippery.
I don't know how you got that wrong. No, syrup is sticky. Syrup would help catching the ball.
No. Either way, you've totally thrown off my train of thought. Either way, USC.
Yes, the squeaky wheel does get the grease.
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, right. That's right. Maybe it's just the people who are being crazy and insane, and most USC fans understand the context of this. Maybe that's the way it goes. I don't know. It's hard to tell. But either way, like, teams don't go undefeated in college football very often. It just doesn't really happen. Most teams don't go undefeated. So let's start there. One loss is not the end of the world. I said before the season started, I was going to give USC a pass on their first loss. This one feels like even though I'm not going to give them the pass on the performance, feels like a pretty good game for me to give them a pass on the road with those injuries,
well,
all this stuff.
Okay.
But
okay, keep going.
Well, okay. So let's go from there. The question that needs to be asked right now, and I think this is the root of all the problems, the question that people were asking is USC going to win the national championship this year? That's not the question you start with. It's not the question you start with. It should never be the question you start with. The question you should have started with, the question that should have been in your head the whole time, this whole September, everything like that, is USC going to win the Pac-12 championship? And maybe that's why I'm sitting here and not as furious as everyone else seems to be. Because I never looked at this team as a national championship caliber team. I thought maybe Sam Darnold elevates you to that, but even then I wasn't sure of it. I never looked at this team as they are going to win a national title. I looked at them and said, they can win a Pac-12 title. And anything after that, you don't know what's going to happen. You put yourself in a position. So is USC in a position to win the Pac-12 title? Yes. As you said, if they win out, it's done. You beat Utah, you beat Oregon State, you beat Arizona State, you beat Arizona, you beat Colorado, you beat UCLA, you will be in the Pac-12 title game. Then right. It's one game. You take it one game at a time.
Yeah.
So, like, I just feel like my expectations haven't been crushed by this game. They really haven't.
I keep coming back to the thing that, again, Clay Helton said that SC needed to start fast. They won their first four games, where last year they were 1-4 in their first four games, or 1-3 in their first four games. So I think they accomplished that. And again, yes, you can sit here and say, well, SC in a worst case scenario could be 2-3 right now. Yeah, I agree. They could be 2-3 right now. Sure. 100%. You change a few plays here and there, they could be 2-3. I agree. However, they're not. And the fact that they're not, despite all those things, is something to be sort of happy about. And I know that, yeah, I think people would feel a lot better about this game if they had been playing well and it was obviously just the injuries that was the cause for this, which it's clearly not just the injuries. Injuries are just one factor. So if SC had blown out Texas and SC had blown out Cal and this game was just they ran into Washington State who was a buzzsaw and SC had a bunch of injuries and you just tip your cap, I think people would feel a lot better right now. Well, and it's not. So I get why people are upset. But at the end of the day, you're 4-1. And again, last year, no matter what happened, the one thing you can say about this team is they got better from beginning to the end. So I don't know that they're going to get better from the beginning to the end again, but there's no reason to think that they couldn't. And if they do that this time, if they fix all those things, barring injuries like screwing everything up, of course, they started 4-1, so they didn't completely screw the whole season up.
Yeah, and I think that's the important point. And I'm not going to sit here and say that USC is going to win out for the rest of the season because I just can't predict that. I do need to see some changes here. But remember last season we talked about and the coaches talked about and everyone talked about how USC needed to lose those games in order to get better.
Yeah.
Well, okay, USC has a sample size
of
5.
Some of that is coach speak and player speak,
right.
But yes.
But they needed, you needed to adjust and you needed to figure things out, right? You needed to lose the games to say, fine, we need to change from Max Brown to Sam Darnold. You needed to tighten up on defense. You learn from every game, right? Well, okay, so USC got away with some stuff in week 1, week 2, week 3, and week 4. They got away with it offensively because the defense was pulling them out of the hole or because Sam Darnold generated a great touchdown drive or whatever. Well, now USC has lost a game with all of those flaws on display. The question now, and it's a question I think you need to give them time to answer, T. Martin, Clay Helton, Tyson Helton, all these people, can you look at this game and see why everyone is pissed off at the offense and change your ways? Adjust. Learn from this. Get better from this. Because they got better from the first 4 games of the 2016 season. They learned from it. They got better. The players learned. The coaches learned. Everything like that. The best way to incite change is to have real consequences for your screwing up. And T. Martin had real consequences tonight for the way that he called that offense. Now, maybe they're just going to pass it off as, man, the injuries were so bad, whatever. But maybe it's a wake-up call. And if it's a wake-up call, then they're going to respond. And if it's not, then they're not going to respond. They're going to lose more games, and people are going to have plenty of reason to be really pissed off and calling for Clay Helton to be fired later on in the season.
Yeah. But again, you got to have faith in that you'd be able to fix it. And I think the other thing is, I think there's a very possible situation where the injuries become such a problem that you won't be able to know if the thing is fixed. For instance, like, what if the injuries get so bad, but yet the play calling gets better, but yet the injuries make all the plays fail? How would we have known? Like, we'll just, like, because everyone judges play calls by the result of them anyways. So that's just one example, but whatever it is, if the injuries get so bad that the running game can't be good and it continues to not be good or whatever it is, people will say that this team didn't improve. Well, maybe they could have improved. I don't know. There's a lot at play. This thing is complex. There's a lot of factors.
Oh, no question. No question. There's tons of things at play. But I think it's also why I just think it's very, very short-sighted. It's very reactionary. It's very just over the top. The amount of people who I see right now who are going to extreme reactions to one loss. If we, you know, if we're sitting here in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and USC has another 2 losses on their record, then we can have these conversations. But, like, I can only imagine what Twitter's going to look like if USC loses another game. They were this nuclear over one.
If USC loses to Oregon State, then all this stuff, yes, fire the entire coaching staff. 100%. But, yeah. Anyways, that'll wrap it up. We'll hold everything off until our full episode. But, hey, it's National Podcast Day, and we would have planned something special, but the schedule didn't work out. But it is National Podcast Day, so we do want to thank you guys for getting this far into this episode and sticking with us through this season, through the off season, through everything. Whenever you've joined up with Reign of Troy and become a Rotbot, thank you. It's been a fun ride to have you with us, and we appreciate that. We wouldn't want to spend National Podcast Day with anybody else but you. Yes, you, the person with the headphones in. Yeah, you. Yeah, with your 11-month-old in the backseat. Yeah. Talking to you, Dan. But since it is National Podcast Day, Alicia, name off three podcasters you want to give a shout-out to.
I want to give a shout-out to Criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Criminal is one of my favorites. I'll give a shout-out to Traveler Hits Thursdays, who I think have done a really, really excellent job this season. I very much enjoyed their recap and what do they call those?
Postmortems?
Yeah. Those are quite good. And I'll give a shout out to Shotgun and Keeley because I really have enjoyed their Family Feud podcast.
Been awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been absolutely awesome.
Got two USC ones and a non-USC.
Yeah, since you've taken the USC ones, I will give the shout outs to my favorite podcast ever, Puck Soup, Greg Wyshynski and Dave Lozo talking about hockey. Love that thing. Bald Move. Bald Move is awesome.
Oh, yes.
I found them this year talking about Fargo, which is one of my favorite TV shows and favorite movie. Obviously, if you look at my Twitter avatar. But anyways, Bald Move is awesome. Love them. And then the other one to mention, I'll just throw out the royalty. Solid Verbal, Ryan Abraham at Peristyle Podcast. I mean, those two are the royalty. So go listen to all of them. Go listen to all of them. And enjoy your National Podcast Day. And again, we thank you for sticking with us and for subscribing and all that stuff. Do give us a review. It does help us on iTunes as well. Alicia, it's been a long day, but at least we weren't at the game. If we were at the game, we wouldn't have even started recording yet. And it is 1:16 and we didn't have to deal with moths. It's good.
Yes. You know, positive things to take out of tonight for sure.
Yeah. All right. We will catch you back with our Fallout episode. Do give us your calls on the Retro Rant line, 213-373-1872. Until then, we will see ya. See ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.